You wouldn't think, like, you know, the adults would be buying orange creamsicle for themselves, but they do.
They just want your big balls.
We're keeping it fresh today with a discussion of current trends. We'll be covering everything from business practices to the latest in soap making community and beyond. So stay tuned because we've got some good stuff coming your way. But before we dive in, I'm going to kick things off with a hot topic every LLC and S-Corp owner out there should know. Today, I'm focusing on something that may not sound super exciting, but it's incredibly important: the beneficial ownership information, or BOI filing. So what exactly is the BOI and why is it so important? If you own an LLC or an S-Corp, you're probably aware that you need to file the beneficial ownership information with the U.S. Department of Treasury. This requirement was created under the Corporate Transparency Act, which aims to bring more transparency to who owns and controls companies. It's all part of an effort to curb things like money laundering and other illegal financial activities. If you're wondering why this matters for your business, here's why. The BOI filing helps the government understand who's behind your company and ensures that those people in control, what we call the beneficial owners, are transparent. This is particularly important for small businesses like ours because it prevents companies from being used in an illicit activity like tax evasion or money laundering. So here's the thing. LLCs and S-Corps are required to file this information to give a clear picture of who controls and owns a business. It's not just about the company's name, it's about the individuals who are making decisions behind the scenes. If you don't file your BOI, the penalties can be steep, up to $500 a day with a potential fine of $10,000 for missing the filing or submitting incomplete or incorrect information. But here's where things get interesting. There was a recent court ruling that temporarily paused the enforcement of the filing deadline. Why did this happen? Well, certain business groups raised concerns, arguing that the rules were too broad and burdensome for small businesses. They also felt that the timeline for filing was too tight and could put businesses in a difficult position. As a result, the court put a temporary stop to the deadline, meaning the December 31st filing deadline is currently voluntary. While the filing requirement still stands, FinCEN, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, has clarified that businesses won't be penalized for missing the deadline while the pause is in effect. However, this doesn't mean you can ignore it forever. It is still critical to get your BOI filed once the situation is resolved. So even though penalties are on the hold, stay ahead of the curve and get it done as soon as possible. So to wrap it up, if you're running an LLC or an S-Corp, don't forget about the BOI filing. Even though penalties are paused, it's important that you stay on top of it and prepare for when things are back on track. It's a good idea to talk to your accountant or your business attorney to make sure you're covered. I actually filed mine today. Once I understood everything on the form, it took me about 15 minutes to do. All right, that's all from me on the business side of things. Jesse, Shauna, what do you guys have for us?
I find it funny. It's all to protect, you know, to expose money laundering. And we're all soap makers.
They should know we're clean anyhow.
I mean, we're the dirty heifers, but we're not. I'll admit it. You know, I'm laundering money, you know, back yonder.
But laundering something.
Here. That's what she said.
When you leave it in your pants pocket and accidentally throw it in, now you're laundering money. That's the money laundering.
Exactly. That's the money laundering going on here.
Exactly.
But, you know, I haven't looked into this a whole lot. I mean, if it becomes mandatory, yes. I mean, I don't want the government on my back. But, I mean, I have watched several videos and I've read some things where they claim it's, you know, to expose money laundering, but really it's not going to do that because money launderers are smart in wrong ways, but they're smart. They're going to figure out a workaround. So really all it's going to do is expose our information to the general public, which really is not a big deal because, I mean, on the backs of all of our labels, it has where our products are produced and such as that. And we're on social media. They know who we are. So, I mean, I get it's a big deal, but it's not a big deal. It's just another regulation that our fantastic government just decided to put on us. Like, we don't have enough on our plates.
Yeah.
That's my outlook on it.
I think one of the things my husband was worried about was foreign governments, because that information is available to everybody. Everybody. And it's not necessarily like we're big targets or anything. But you still don't want too much out there, you know?
No. No.
Well, one of the things that I was thinking of is, as a teacher, one of the things our union fought for was unnecessary paperwork. Like asking a teacher to grade a test and then record the results of that test in 75 different places instead of just one. You know what I mean? Like just doing unnecessary paperwork. So to me, this feels like unnecessary paperwork because of that information was obtained when I filed for my LLC in the first place.
Right.
And it's all registered with the state already. So
what's this going to solve?
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not going to solve anything.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, even if somebody is, now I'm not a crime boss, you know, I'm not back here in the what sticks in Mississippi, like cranking out money laundering services, you know.
Just moonshine.
You bring it, we'll launder it, you know, just moonshine. I'm just, not really. But, there it went.
Distracted you. You're not money laundering.
Well, I'm not. I mean, oh, bless it. Where was I going with that?
Gosh, it is frustrating, though. It's one of those things. It's like, I understand when your business gets above a certain level that it, you know, there's need for transparency.
When you got
right.
You got several entities in it.
Right. But like my business is myself and my husband.
Exactly.
Right.
And we don't even pay ourselves from the business right now because we're not making that much. So, right.
Yeah, I get it. You know, it's like Margaret said, it's unnecessary paperwork. I mean, we filed, if you look up Country Lather Soapworks LLC on Google, it will show my name, Jessica Whittington.
Right.
That's what it will show. And it's raining again.
Squirrel.
So, I mean, the BOI, is that what it is?
Beneficial ownership information.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to show the same exact thing that if you Google it, it's going to pull the same thing up, you know. Jesse Whittington's soap company and money laundering service. Criminals will find a workaround.
That's actually what Margaret's laundry soap is for.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. You're washing money.
Yeah. I mean, it needs to be washed, right? It's gross. It's nasty.
Yuck.
Well, that's true.
Funny story. Here a while back, my little girl, she had her hands full and she put a dollar bill just right in her lips. You know, not really in her mouth, but in her lips. And I looked at her and said, somebody pulled that out of their bra in Louisiana. It was hot and sweaty in the middle of September.
Mm-hmm. Or it's been down someone's G-string.
I don't know if you want to have that conversation with your little girl, though.
Well,
she's old enough.
I mean, eventually.
Don't say that, Jesse.
Self-censoring.
Well, I can do it from time to time.
Occasionally.
On occasion.
Not every thought comes straight out of your mouth, right? It's interesting, though, that also Mokra, they talked a lot about how that was all about transparency, too. And transparency can be a great thing, but
it can add so much.
Right.
It can add so much to it.
And when you're a small business, it's a lot of burden. It makes it very hard to be a successful small business whenever you have so much paperwork and so much regulation, so many things you have to file. And if you don't, they're going to fine you, what, $500 a day, you said? I mean, that's huge for a small business.
My gosh. Huge. That could make or break. Make or break. I mean,
there are months when you don't make $500 a day. Or $500 a week, even.
Exactly. You know, October, that is the killer month in our business. That is the statistically, over the past 4 years I've been in business, October is killer every year.
October and August isn't so great either.
Past couple years, which it probably has a lot to do with that ad, but August has been good for me the past few years. But October, since I started, is my worst month, statistically. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because I don't make Halloween products, but everybody else does, and that's just not my thing.
Even when I was making Halloween products, they're just not big sellers.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. People want candy. People want candy. They don't want
to
wash.
You need to tell TikTok to start running that ad in October for you.
For real. Let's balance it out.
Because every time they run it, you get another, influx of orders, right?
Yeah.
Must be
Shauna,
nice.
You mentioned Mokra. Tell me what Mokra is.
So Mokra is the Modernization of Cosmetics Regulation Act. It is something, obviously, as the title would suggest, it is to modernize the FDA regulations on cosmetics, because I think this says that they were written in 1938. It's been a minute since those were written.
A minute or two.
Of course, as I mentioned, the big initiative is transparency. So, you know, people are concerned about allergens, and eventually everybody's going to be required to submit, you know, any allergens that might be present in their product, especially if you're over a certain amount of sales per year. I don't think any of us are, I think it was like $1 million in sales or something.
They
take an average over a 3-year period, and if you average over that 3-year period $1 million plus within a year, then you've got to, you know, officially register with Mokra as a soap maker. Mm-hmm. You know, it basically, my understanding is it breaks it down into GMP, good manufacturing practices. You know, it's batch numbers, and so, you know, where traceability, where if somebody has a bad reaction to a bar of your soap, you can trace it back to the, you know, this batch of oils was used, or this batch of goat milk was used, this, you know, such as that. And that's, I think that's mainly what it really specifies on.
Mm-hmm. But also the EU has a whole list of allergens that can be present in things. Mm-hmm. And they now, once you hit that certain limit, list those allergens in your products somewhere. So now if you go to a website to buy a fragrance oil, they have that report on there now. Mm-hmm. If you notice, you know, you have your SDS and everything,
it does
allergens list too as well. So you can see whether or not a particular fragrance has any of those allergens. Mm-hmm. Be able to trace it back. Yeah. So that's a new thing.
Yeah, I noticed that a couple months ago, especially on, I've noticed it more prominently on Midwest Fragrance Co., their website. Like, you can pull up, they've got a little link where you can pull up the SDS sheet, and it shows everything.
Right. So that was one thing. I don't think they've actually have a date for that now, but a lot of them have that. I know I was looking at some fragrances just a day or two ago and saw that. Sorry if this, my paper's making a lot of noise.
You trouble.
Yeah.
the noisy heifer.
Oh, well, thank you. The one who barely talks. Another big thing that was, I know this was a huge thing for a lot of small makers. In the original act, you were supposed to list your address of manufacturing on the label, which for us would be our home addresses, right? And that was a huge safety concern for a lot of people. And my understanding from the conference is that now it just has to be a way to contact you in case of a serious adverse event. And I think a lot of that just harks back to before the internet, there was no way of easily contacting a business unless you had their street address for something. Yeah. And that made sense, but in this modern day and age, it doesn't make sense to have your street address on a label, number one, that has limited room anyway. But number two, I mean, the address is available somewhere online. Mm-hmm. If people really want it, they can find it. But also people were worried about, you know, people who had issues with stalkers or domestic violence or something, and they didn't want to list their address on the label and be that much easier to find. And that was really restricting to some people. So now I think it's just you need to have, you know, like my own website has a way to contact us. And most websites do. There's a contact us button. They can send an email that they have an issue. So I think now that we have that, there's email, there's social media, there's like tons of ways to contact us. As long as you have those on your label now, from what I understand, that's sufficient to cover that requirement. And that's a huge one in the, because I remember reading so many posts of people refusing to put their address on the label before the SAT came through because of the safety concerns.
Yeah. And another kind of a shift off to that is, you know, that's what's required through MOCRA. But I have a TikTok shop. Anybody that is on TikTok, you've probably shopped on TikTok. That is a new trending thing, is TikTok shop. And actually, with being a soap maker on TikTok shop, you have to have your full physical address on that label, or they will flag your product, they will take it down. Mm-hmm. And that was a big point of contention for me. But I mean, I'm not like everybody else. Thank God I live way out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, that there's not, but that was a big problem for me, was I had to, I mean, box and everything. I had to put my full street address where the product is manufactured. And it is what it is. And it's, you know, that's a bridge you've got to cross at some point in time. I mean, as you grow, you know, you're going to end up having to put your, look at, you know, the Bubble Factory and Dr. Squatch and all that. It's got a production address on the back of each box. And it's just, eventually, if you keep growing, that is just a thing you're going to have to do to comply. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's my understanding now, though, with MOCRA, that you don't have to have the street address or the
for
whole
now,
street
but she
address.
Was saying, for TikTok shop.
Gotcha.
You do.
Which is funny. They're more strict.
I did not realize that was why my listings kept being taken down. Mm-hmm. And that's why I closed my TikTok shop.
Yeah. I've still got a TikTok shop. It's not really booming. I haven't really pushed it that much. But I finally made big enough stink that I've got a TikTok shop representative to call me on my phone, and we walked through it, and I told him, I said, you don't understand, I said, with MOCRA, I said, this is not required. Mm-hmm. But with some selling platforms, you're going to run into that.
Well, I think that's also because they sell all over the world, and in other countries like Europe, the regulations are much more.
Yeah. And so you'll probably run into that. Like, you know, hopefully here in the next few months, I hope to launch my products on Amazon. I'm sure that's going to be a requirement. You know?
It's not. I already have stuff on Amazon. And
really?
Yeah. It's a lot easier than TikTok, honestly. You just have to make the decision as to whether you want to send your product to them and have them fulfill it, mm-hmm. or if you want to fulfill it yourself. Now, I was talking to Joanna about that. Joanna being Joanna Couch from the Soap Gal. And she said Amazon is a game changer. And if you can have them fulfill, you're better off. Because if you're fulfilling it yourself, you just don't, that your stuff doesn't get seen.
Well, that's what I was wanting to do, was to do it fulfilled by Amazon. Mm-hmm. That's what I was figuring on. I mean, you know me, hold your beer. If you go big or go home.
Mm-hmm. And you know, people do ask. I've had people ask me before, is your stuff available on Amazon? It's not yet, but sounds like it needs to be.
But they take a big cut. They take a huge.
It's like, what, 33%?
It's, you know what? It's that, and also because soap is heavy. So they take more of a cut to ship it. They take more of a cut to store it, too, because you're paying storage fees to them as well. So it's, you know.
Now, do you have an Amazon distribution center near you and take it to it? Or, because there's one close to us. And I'm wondering.
I've got one an hour from me.
Yes, but it doesn't matter. They tell you where to send it to.
Well, that's unfortunate, because I was thinking, like,
maybe it's the one right there, and maybe it's one halfway across the country.
So then you have to pay to ship it to them, and then you also take a hit in shipping it out.
Yeah, and imagine, you know, you're selling, let's say you're sending in 100 bars. How much is 100 bars going to weigh? 30 pounds? How much is it going to cost you to ship it? You got it, and then you have to pay to ship it to them, and then also they're taking their cut when they ship it out as well, and you're storing it there, and they're charging you for that.
So how does this become such a game changer then?
The game changer is here. First of all, you're not gonna have the same prices on Amazon as you are on your website. You're probably gonna even up it a little bit so that you can cover some of those costs. Mm-hmm. But it's the amount of people.
Yeah, it's volume.
It's the volume.
As you and I have learned this, as you progress in business, it's not so much about your profit margin. It's more the quantity.
Yep.
You know, it's you make up for your profit margin and the amount of product that you push out. And when you're dealing with an entity such as Amazon, mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to send them a lot of product, hopefully. So that's where you make up your profit margin at is in quantity. It's just by sheer numbers.
Yeah.
So that sounded smart right there. Sheer numbers.
Quantity.
It's quantity.
Big words.
Sheer would be better if we were sheep.
That took me a minute.
I was trying to sound smartificated, okay?
Edumacation.
I'm edumacated. Edumacation.
Oh, so Lord, another Lord, trend Lord. That we've all noticed a lot, I was just thinking of, is that, which is kind of ironic because I've been making them lately, but bath bombs aren't selling as well as they used to.
No.
But shower steamers are going crazy.
Shower steamers?
Yeah.
I have more of a request for my steamers than I do for my bath bombs.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I also have lots of people lately asking me when I'm going to restock the kids' bath bombs. I have smaller bath bombs that have little resin prizes in them. And lots of people have been saying, like, when are those going to be restocked? And funny enough, I've also noticed that when I make big bath bombs in the same fragrances as the kids' bath bombs, those also sell well. You wouldn't think, like, you know, the adults would be buying orange creamsicle for themselves, but they do.
They just want your big balls.
And this is why we are the dirty heifers, okay? Thank you for the amazing demonstration, Jesse.
That's what she said. Y'all get your minds out the gutter, okay?
They're not all balls, though. Look at that. Hexagonal ball.
But yeah, the bath bombs have been really
slow lately.
Slow.
I have completely discontinued bath bombs.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I've still got my equipment up there, and I told my husband the other day, I said, I'm actually considering selling it, putting it on the marketplace. Because, okay. I mean, soap is what I love. I love to make soap. The bath bombs, while they were trendy, I sold a buttload of them. I mean, I sold a pile of them. But they're just not a thing anymore. But I tell you one thing I have noticed actually selling a lot is bath salts.
Really?
Have y'all seen that?
I stopped making bath salts.
I think I need to revamp my formula, honestly. I've got some bath salts that I have failed to list because I've got 9 million other things. And on top of that, you know, we'll have to file the BOI. On top of all that, tax season coming up.
Yeah.
It's just, sometimes there's just not enough hours in the day.
No, there isn't.
You know, it's just.
Right. I mean, how many products have I have on my list of things that I need to make and launch and I haven't yet?
Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. I get that. Go ahead.
I do wonder, though, because I asked about this in one of my groups for several people who had been customers. And I said, you know, is there something I'm missing with the bath bomb thing? And some people said, well, they thought it was a trend that was over now. But bath bombs have been around for like 20 years or more. Yeah. So it's not a recent thing. I think it might be more economy related. I think people are so worried about groceries and paying their rent and everything. Mm-hmm. They're having a very hard time with something that you have to take time and sit in a bathtub with. And I wonder if the economy improves, if they're going to come back again, you know?
Well, I've looked at it like this. People buy a bath bomb, and I don't know about you. I don't know what your prices are. I haven't looked at your website. But I'd got to where I had to charge $4 for a regular, like, 2.5-inch bath bomb.
Yep.
And you use that bath bomb, it's gone. It's a one-time use thing.
I would say to my girls, when we would be walking through craft shows and stuff, this is before I was making bath bombs, mm-hmm. and they would want to buy one, and I'm like, $5, it's literally going to go down the drain. I'm going to put it in your bath and watch it go down the drain. I'm not spending $5 on that. And now I make them. So please spend $5 on my bath bombs.
But you can also change them to make them worth that. I mean, I have truffles and bath bombs, and I actually use cocoa and shea butter in both of them. And even the bath truffles, people are like, oh my gosh, I get out. My skin is so soft. Mm-hmm. So, but nobody knows what they are until they try it.
Right.
What's a bath truffle?
That's one of the downfalls of being an e-commerce sellers. You know, you can't sit and talk to each person. They're not coming into your storefront and having a conversation with you. They're not smelling the product.
It is very hard. Yep. Until we get smell-o-vision.
Yeah, I know. And it's like the bath bomb is a one-time use, and people are so strapped for cash right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The economy is, I mean, it sucks right now. It really is. And mm-hmm. people have had to cut back on groceries. They've had to cut back on travel. People aren't taking trips like they are. You think they're going to spend $5 on something they're just literally going to watch go down the drain, like right. Margaret said? No. I mean...
But they will for their kids, funny enough. I mean, they, you know, get the smaller ones for their kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, it's, you know, I can produce 120 bars of soap. Give or take like an hour with prep included.
Right.
In an hour, I don't have a big blender or a mixer like Shauna's got. You know, I would be struggling to make 60 bath bombs in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, what takes the time is not necessarily pressing out the bath bombs, especially if you've got a pneumatic press like we all have.
Right.
It's the prep. It's the mixing. It's to make sure your mix is perfect because humidity is a factor down
that,
here.
That
oh, my
is
gosh.
A big... Yeah.
Every you time know. I make bath bombs, I'm on the phone with you or July, like, what's going on with this one?
Yeah.
Yeah,
we've
just
had so many conversations over bath bombs.
Yeah. And a lot of it's the most. So today I was, and yesterday I was making some, and I was making the small kid ones, and then I made some bigger ones, 2.5-inch ones, in the same fragrances. And I was struggling with those little small, like one and a half inch bath bombs or something like that. They would crack, all kinds of things. I go to the 2.5-inch, come out of the mold beautifully. So sometimes it's just the mold itself, you know?
Bath bombs are so freaking temperamental. It just,
they are.
You know, that was half of the reason why I decided to discontinue. And it just, some things are just not worth your peace.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just really not, especially if they don't sell like, I mean, soap's my big seller. My bar soaps are, and the dish soaps are up and coming, but the bar soaps are my big sellers. and it's what I love to do. And the bath bombs, they're a headache, and they're not selling. It's just, it's not.
But then, but then there are people out there whose entire business is bath bombs, and they're doing fine. It's so bizarre.
Well, see, that's the thing. That's their niche. Niche, whatever. That's what they do.
They've tapped into that audience.
They've tapped into that audience. It's like, you know, if somebody's browsing the internet and they type in, you know, bath bombs, our websites are not going to pop up. Even though we've sold bath bombs, our websites are not going to pop up. You know who will pop up? Lush.
Yes. The inventor of the bath bomb.
Yeah. I mean, there's several companies, like you said, that is what they do, is they make bath bombs. That's who's going to pop up. But then again, if you type in, you know, Southern Gentleman Soap, who's going to pop up? Shauna. They type in, you know, a barbershop scented soap. Margaret's going to pop up. They type in Country Hick off of TV, I'm going to pop up.
That TikTok one.
Said, that little girl that makes the soap from the South. I saw her on Fox News.
Listen at Margaret trying to sound Southern.
That's my mother.
Your mother does not sound Southern.
No, my mother would sound more like this. Hey, Fuzzy. I was watching Fox News and I saw your little friend who makes soap. The one from the South. She was on the Fox TV. Why aren't you on the Fox TV?
Hey!
My mother doesn't really sound like that. I mean, she can, but...
I noticed, though, like a year or two ago, you had a video with your family, Margaret, and your accent got thicker all of a sudden. Like, you could tell you were from Long Island.
Absolutely. When I am surrounded by somebody who has an accent that's different than mine, I am completely blending in. I am a chameleon, and I fit right in. My accent changes with whoever I'm with.
Shauna, did she sound like a country hick when we was in Connecticut?
No, but Shauna doesn't sound like a country hick.
No, but Shauna has no accent whatsoever.
No, she doesn't. So that's why. So I was probably feeding off of her. But if I was down and spending some time down at your house,
I would too, actually.
You'd be instantly country.
Yes.
I would the same. Because I grew up with it too, so it's like easier to slip into it.
Right.
Then y'all would be legit heifers.
But you know what's funny? I have a friend in the UK and she you're talking about I have no accent, cracked me up. She said, I was showing my husband one of your videos because she follows me on social media, that he said your accent is sexy, and I was like, what accent? But, you know, they're British, so to them, we have an accent.
To them, we definitely have an accent.
But it was funny, because she's like, she said she thought it was too, and I was like, okay, thank you. First time I've heard that one.
That's weird. Yeah, because I'm...
Like, well, keep watching my videos.
That's like, you know, if we, we're on live, if, like, Margaret, if we run across one of Sadie's lives, you know, that accent cracks us up because, I mean, it's not something we hear all the time.
I love any accent.
Oh, have y'all seen the Scottish guy that does the, tries the different snacks from America?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. I could listen to him talk all day long.
Scottish is hard. John, John's from, you know, his family is from Scotland, and they sound like little angry Irish people.
And they would probably take offense that you said
they probably would that, yeah. Because Irish and Scottish is not the same.
No, they're not the same, but they sound like it's like Irish.
Similar.
But like German angry, if that makes sense.
I see what you mean.
You know what I mean? Like it's a harder, harsher language. It's a harsher accent.
But I think they also have a lot more slang too.
They do. Oh, they do. Like, the Irish people, they sound sweet and cute and such, and yeah, I could totally get that analogy.
So, any other trends we can think of?
Currently, beard oil, beard balm is a big thing. that yeah. I mean, the in the past few years, the men's skincare market mm-hmm. has just went.
Yeah,
and
right.
The thing right now is like the Uncle Si beards. I mean, that is a huge thing. I formulated some beard oils here last week that mm-hmm. I've got a private label customer that has requested them. And I mean, if it pops off, they're super easy to make.
Yeah,
you legit nice. Just mix it. You measure out your oils, and you mix your oils up, and you put them in a dropper bottle.
Yeah. You want to hear something stupid?
How do you get them in the dropper bottle?
Huh?
Funnel.
How do you get them in a funnel?
Hang on a minute.
Woohoo! Demonstration time. Because I already make the beard balms, but
these. The ones I ordered come with these cute little funnels.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, super easy. And if I get to where I sell a whole bunch of them, I've got a bottling machine under the countertop over there.
Oh, well, I don't have. Now, you want to hear something stupid? I actually formulated a beard oil like 2 years ago and took some in and had people test it out, and they gave me rave reviews on it and said, let me know when you got it released. And I still haven't released it. And it's only partly because I just need to figure out price point, which mm-hmm. that's always a yeah. hard thing for me. And I got to yeah. design a label. I don't yeah. know why designing a label is holding me back, but it is.
Designing a label is tough. John does all of our labels now.
With this customer, they're designing their own labels.
That's nice.
So That took a lot of load off of me. And I'm not saying that this customer is going to take the product and run with it. They might get it and test it and hate it.
Right.
You know, but beard oils, beard balm, all that stuff is huge right now.
Well, I can tell you that massive. That's why I'm currently, you know, I already carry several masculine fragrances. I'm currently working on mm-hmm. strengthening my masculine line. And it's really popping off. People love that. And especially since my husband is on one of those online forums he's been on forever, and it's all men. And he brought up our business and they went wild.
Mm-hmm.
He really did.
Yeah. And, you know, and I think what started that was Dr. Squatch.
Mm-hmm.
Once Dr. Squatch hit the scene of being like a men's marketing towards men,
yep,
that really caught on. I mean, it caught on big time. And men's scents are my best seller.
Mm-hmm.
But when I look at, you know, the analytics on my website, it's not the men that's buying it. It's the women, it's the wives, it's the girlfriends that's buying it for their men,
husbands. Yep.
You know, and I know like my husband, bless his heart, I love him to death, and baby, I'm not dogging you, but he doesn't buy anything. Like, he'll go into a convenience store and get him a monster drink or whatever. But when it comes to everyday stuff that he'll use at home, he doesn't buy any of it. And that's the vast majority of blue-collar men. They don't buy their stuff. It's, you know, hey, baby, can you order this? So that's what it is. You've got to market it towards men, but in a way that a woman's going to love to see it and buy it. That makes sense.
It does. And a woman needs to like the scent too, because she's going to be smelling it on him.
She's going to be smelling it. That's why, like my amber and oak moss scent, you know, I have people that'll ask me about it, and I'll tell them straight up. And I've legit told ladies this, like, if you ain't in the mood, don't let him wash in that.
Because you'll get there. You won't be a heifer for long. I'm just kidding.
You won't be a heifer for long. You'll then be a dirty heifer.
Jesse, would you like to share the actual definition of an
real heifer? I knew that was coming.
So that the audience will know why we're cracking up.
Okay. So the scientific definition of a heifer is, and what it's just completely bass backwards why we're called the dirty heifers, but a heifer is an unbred cow,
and yet we've all been bred.
Okay. But It's all
that,
good.
That's but mild yeah, for one of our conversations. Anyway.
You know, when you live on a farm or you're around farm folk, it's just part of life, you know. And heifer is a term of endearment down here, but the scientific name of a heifer is a cow that has not been bred. So I guess that's why another reason why we can call ourselves the dirty heifers, because, I mean, evidently we have, you know.
Once again, I'm pretty sure it's more about the that's what she said jokes than anything.
That's what she said.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, as much as we tease you about being a 12-year-old, we're not that much better.
Yeah, in a 40-year-old woman's further. Body.
The smallest and the youngest of us. All right, any other trends we've noticed? What was that?
I just say this. If I'm the youngest and I'm 40 years old, y'all heifers must be really old.
We are.
Yep. You're really old.
Keep insulting us, Jesse. The next conference, you're in for it.
That's okay, because right now, y'all can't reach out and smack me upside the head.
Right now.
It's coming, though.
But we do know where you live.
That's true. It's posted on TikTok.
I want to see y'all come out here.
It's on TikTok shop. We know where you live.
I legit want to see y'all bring y'all's heifers' butts down here.
Listen, I don't think it's going to be very much culture shock for me.
No, but look, the day that Margaret comes way down here, I'm excited to see that because...
It can't happen in the summer. I will die. It'll just be one big pile of sweat.
Yeah, that's true.
For anybody who's new to... I mean, this is a new podcast, but new to us... I live in Satan's butt crack. I live in South Mississippi, where in August it is nothing for us to have a heat index of 120 with 70% humidity.
So and it's mosquito heaven, right?
Whoo, we got skaters that'll tote you off.
In August.
Margaret might actually be comfortable for once.
I would recommend October or any time between October and March.
Except it's cold there now and raining.
It's not raining right now.
Cold.
Hey, look here now.
She need her coveralls this week.
I know.
I did.
It's under 60 degrees. Jessie's in her coveralls.
Under 50. 50 okay. degrees.
Okay.
But look, the other morning... What was it, Friday morning? We had a wind chill of 22 degrees. That is bull crap weather. That is stupid weather.
Do not come up here around March. That's February, March is when we get our snow.
I would come up there if you found one of them tubing places where I could... You remember the video I showed you, Robin? I've never been snow skiing, and I have never been tubing. I had the most snow I've ever seen was when I was about 7 years old. We had 11 inches of snow, and I went through like probably 7 sets of clothes that day because I was outside all day in the snow making snowmen and snow angels. So I came in like soaking wet from snow because we don't have
in the South have that. I remember when I was little in Tennessee or North Carolina and we would go out in the snow and then you're out in the snow in your jeans and come out there like soaked. You have to lay in front of the fireplace. Up here you have snow pants.
Yeah, we don't have snow pants. I mean, we've got hip waders.
I mean, you put those on over your pants, that'd probably help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't duck hunt, so I don't have hip waders.
Well, for you, it'd be like nipple waders.
I'll mark that.
And them buggers would be sticking straight out from the cold.
Once again, this is why we are the dirty heifers.
There's no filter between here and here. Ain't got it.
I don't know if we should explain, because we make so many jokes right now, that Jesse's only like 5 feet tall.
I am 5'1" with my shoes on.
Excuse me.
I'm claiming it. Every quarter of an inch I can get.
We are nearly a foot taller than you, woman.
Everybody's nearly a foot taller than me.
My son is, I think my son might be taller than you right now. He's
10. He probably is.
And he's 10.
Look, there's a guy that we go to church with, and he's got to be every bit of 6'4", okay? And he's a sweet guy, but he'll come. He's the guy that, you know, he's going to hug everybody's neck after church. Everybody. He's going to hug everybody. That's just the...
Does he get on his knees to hug your neck?
I'm pinching your head. No, but he legit, like, if he's standing, he'll lean down like this. And he'll grin when he does it, too, because I mentioned it one time. I said, have you noticed how much you have to lean down to hug me? He said, yeah.
I'm sure he feels it every time he goes home. He's like, oh, gee.
You're right. He needs a chiropractor.
He needs to sit down. Okay.
I thought of another trend. Back on topic.
Squirrel.
Yeah. So, all right. So this isn't a new trend, but sustainability.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Companies are going crazy with sustainability. Right. I know that that's one of the big things that impacted us. When we first started, we were shrink wrapping everything. And one of our first customers from California sent us back an email and said, this is the best soap I've ever had. If you could make your packaging
more
environmentally
friendly,
you would have a customer for life. And we had been thinking of changing at that point anyway. And so we switched to wrapping with paper.
Well, that's why I do this right now. But
right.
But we're switching to boxes soon. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, I shrink wrap.
Always.
I shrink wrap mine as well, which the shrink wrap I use is, and I cannot for the life of me say that word.
I think it's biofilin. I think
my brain just cramps when I try to say that. So I just call it biofilm.
That's what I call it.
But it's a plant-based shrink wrap, and it will dissolve in what is it, Margaret? Like a year?
That's what they said. Like they said a year
in the right conditions, right? Not while it's on your product, while it's in the landfill.
No.
Yeah, in a landfill.
I mean, and you may want to edit this out, Margaret. I don't know. It's up to you. But what I have noticed since switching to biofilm, it's a great product. It's, you know, if you're going towards the environmentally friendly, that's your product. If you're still in the shrink wrap stage, but if you handle that bar very much, the seams are going to split, and it's going to look janky, which is why I, like Shauna, am making the move to have my product in boxes. And it's very possible by the time this podcast airs, I will have my product in boxes because it's more environmentally friendly. It's paper.
Right.
And it keeps my husband in business because he's a logger.
Yeah. I mean, recyclability, yeah. And they talked a lot about sustainability at our conference and things you can do. A lot of people are trying to get away from plastic. The problem with that, though, is like when you have something like your sugar scrubs, you don't want glass in your shower, right? So, and if you do cardboard, it's going to fall apart. So that makes it difficult.
It's so funny because I was just making body butters the other day, and I make them in a bigger, like, a short round plastic container. And the reason I do plastic is because it's in the bathroom. I don't want somebody to drop it. Then it breaks and all that. And John said, just this week, should we switch to glass?
Right.
And I said, no, I don't know about glass because, you know, people have it in the bathroom and a break. And he said, what's the chances of that? He goes, when you're looking for an upscale product, a really, you know, fancy product, you're not, you have the glass, bougie. If you're looking for a bougie product, You see the glass one and you see the plastic one. Which one are you going for?
You got to pick up the glass one.
You're going to pick right. up the glass one.
But the other challenges with glass are the glass is way more expensive. So you have to charge more for product. And it's heavier.
It's heavier for shipping.
Right.
Yeah, it's heavier. But, I mean, I know there are some forms of, like, you've got several different types of glass. Mm-hmm. You've got some glasses, you got some forms of glass that are more resilient mm-hmm. than other forms. So mm-hmm. I'm sure that's something else you could look into, you know, because, I mean, it's kind of like if you drop a Corel brand plate.
Right. It'll bounce.
It'll bounce. You know,
I don't know. I haven't seen any packaging like that, though. And that, I mean, you can only select from the packaging that's available, too.
Right.
I mean, I guess you can also do metal cans, metal tins, but I don't know how many people want that.
Right. Exactly.
Refillable.
What I like.
Refillable stuff is good.
The plastic because it's clear, but again, now it's a single-use plastic.
Right.
But it's not really single-use because you're using it for...
Right. The flip side also is that, like, I think you can get plastic recycling in more places than glass. We can't recycle glass where I am.
You can't recycle crap where I'm at.
Well.
I mean, you have garbage and that is it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know that they stopped doing it here because there was no glass recycling plant nearby. And they said mm-hmm. the amount it cost to ship the glass to be recycled just kind of canceled out the whole thing. And that's another thing we're talking about. Glass is more expensive, but heavier. So it's going to cost more to ship and cost more in fuel. It's hard to find that balance, you know?
Right. It's really tough to find that balance.
And that's what it's about, and it's finding that balance, you know. Mm-hmm. It's got finding where you want to be and what's important to you in your business.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Meeting that customer base where it's at.
I think we're all trying, but, you know, at some point you got to also think about the quality of your product and...
Yep.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Like so, you know, you there's know, certain
containers it should always be... Yeah, it should always be in the back of your mind. Like, I don't want to do anything wasteful.
Right.
But I'm certainly not going to harm the business or cut my bottom line so much that it, you know, I...
Right.
Yeah.
To be sustainable.
Right.
I've got another topic. Okay. Trending topic. And this one I think is a good one. AI.
That one is controversial.
Right. It is in so many... aspects of mm-hmm. businesses now.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So you can use it to write your copy. You can use it to write your listings. You can use it to, you know, to write blog posts for you. You can use it to write scripts for videos. It's just so...
I actually just so saw...
to everything.
I saw a program. I haven't bought it or used it, but there was a program that was talking about using AI to edit your videos for you.
Mm.
And I was like,
really?
That's interesting. I don't know how well that would work, but.
Well, the way I see it is this, because this program that we're using right now, Riverside FM, if anybody's wondering, when I put this in, it will come up with a script. It comes up with show notes. It comes up with chapters on its own. And there's an option to edit it for me. I'm afraid to take that option yet, but I might. Maybe take one of the episodes and have it edit it and then see what it does.
Can you revert it back if it don't like it?
Yeah, you'd have the original. Okay. Like it saves the original and then you can, you know, work from the edit. But
it's crazy what AI can do these days. I mean, it's crazy what AI can do. Think about 2 years ago. Would you have figured you'd be using AI anything with your business? Mm-mm. I use it on my TikTok shop. I have used TikTok Shop's AI tool to create the descriptions for my products.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, because it
does a better job than I do.
I was actually just thinking the other night of going through all my products on the website instead of just describing the fragrance notes, having AI describe that. But I have used it for coming up with new names. Like,
I've done it.
This is the fragrance notes. Help me come up with a name. We mm-hmm. actually used it recently. For those who don't know, we're building a house and actually we're creating an entire neighborhood. So we had to come up with, we were trying to come up with a neighborhood development name. So we came up with our road name, but you have to come up with a development name too. And we were using AI to try and come up with a development name. And I'm not going to share what it is right now, but anyway, with very specific initials and criteria, and it was helping us come come up with it. So it's useful in that way. I think you use AI for this podcast a lot, but I think you need to be honest with people about certain things. I know that this became very controversial when artwork is used. And, and I know even on, you know, I'm an avid reader, and even some of the accounts that I have followed for like book talk type accounts, they've been using AI for the last couple of years to create character images on there. And some people love it and some people don't. So
I like to look at the AI pictures online and find the little discrepancies, like the guy over there that's got like 7 fingers on one hand and one eye is like, rrr.
What about the, yeah. when Margaret made the one for the dirty heifers and it was like dirty, hey, heifers.
Yeah, they don't have any, the words don't come out right in it, but I've noticed that there are people who, they're making entire professions and careers out of making up good prompts. So obviously the better the prompt you use, the better your outcome will be. But if, you know, for people like myself who, you know, I'm just asking it a question real quick, you get a lot of answers that start to sound the same. They use a lot of the same words, right? So last week I was going back and forth with my mom about something, and she sent me an article, or what she thought was an article that she got from Meta's AI. And what she sent me was the actual link to Meta AI. So there was no article. It was just like I could go and type in a question for their AI. And I went back to her and I'm like, what are you talking about? She's like, oh, it's this, you know, it's this, it's the AI. They asked you about something. So then flipping back and forth, I accidentally replied to her, but in the Meta AI conversation. So Meta responded to me and I thought it was my mom. And I'm like, the heck is this? This isn't how she speaks. Did she have AI write me a response to my conversation? And then I looked and I realized, oh, I'm talking to AI. And I'm able to pick it up right away. I mean, like at least, you know, that particular instance, it wasn't very conversational, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So but as it improves, it will be.
As it improves and as your prompt, your questioning gets better, it's going to be tough.
Yeah.
There's good to it and then there's disturbing to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I see a lot of disturbing coming because get good about the prompts and get really creative about how to use it, I could see, which is like anything, it could be used for good and bad, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thanks for sticking with us, everyone. We're wrapping things up today, and we hope you've enjoyed our chat on our current trends. Remember, whether it's keeping up with business requirements or new industry movements, it's important to stay informed and ahead of the game. We'll be back with more next time, but until then, you can find us on social media at The Dirty Heifers. Don't forget to like, share, and join the herd. Subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode. And we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave us a review and tell us what trends you're seeing in your own business or craft world. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, may your soap bubbles be big, your lather be luxurious, and your dreams rise as high as your cold process loaf. Stay dirty, heifers.